Lisa Zinner, Barry Robbins, and Yana Johnson. Barry is an advisory software engineer working in Raleigh, North Carolina. He has worked with IBM for over 27 years. For the last 18 years, he has worked customer service, including support of the CICS and TX Series products. In 2002, he joined the Webster MQ support team. Currently, Barry is responsible for resolving customer problems as they relate to Webster MQ or distributed platforms. Yana Johnson is a staff software engineer in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yana has worked with IBM for 8 years in customer support, including TX Series products. In 2002, she joined the Webster MQ support team. Currently, Yana is responsible for resolving customer problems as they relate to Webster MQ, the distributed platform. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Barry and Yana.
Thank you and good morning, everyone. Today's presentation, we're going to take you through an introduction to logging. So if we advance now to foil number two, so what we're going to talk about is we're going to go over what are logs and what they're used for. We're going to talk about the logging parameters, logging configuration, the creation of the logs, log usage, log management, recovery, and the summary and questions at the end. Moving on to foil three. So let's start with what are logs used for. Go ahead and go to foil four. When we talk about logs, what we're talking about is the transaction logs. And what they do is they provide the write-ahead feature of the Webster MQ product by recording your transactional information in a centralized location. The centralized location consists of two components. One is a series of log data files. Those are named, as you see here, S0.log through S79.log, or basically 10 million different log file names. There's also a second component, which is a log control file. This contains metadata associated with the log files themselves. By default, we place these files in the following locations. You see here for Unix and for Windows where you would find log files for your queue manager. Moving forward to slide number five. So what the transaction logs contain, what they contain, obviously they're going to contain your transaction activity, units of work, and your persistent messages. They're also going to contain your internal data about your queue manager objects. And by objects, we're talking about queues or channels and such. And they will contain persistent channel status. Moving on to foil six. So in MQ, there's two types of logging. There's circular logging and there's linear logging. And here I've put together a list of attributes. And as you can see with circular and linear logging, from performance and administration perspective, circular tends to have the advantage. It's a little better performing. It definitely is a little easier to administer. But you'll notice at the end where I have the ability to archive and do media recovery or object recovery, that is a feature of linear only. That is not an option with circular logging. But these are the two types that we offer, and we'll go into the details of the differences between those two later in the presentation. Moving on to slide seven. So let's go through the logging parameters that make up the control or options available to the different types of logging. Moving on to foil eight. There are several parameters that control the operation of logs. Some of the parameters can have a significant impact on your performance characteristics. Some of the parameters you'll find you can only set when you create your queue manager and by virtue create your initial logs. Some parameters you can change after you've created them. There are a couple parameters that are only changeable after the queue manager has been created and after logs have been created. And we'll talk about these in some detail in the next slides. Moving on to slide nine. Obviously, we talked about there's two different types of logs, linear and circular. It must be selected. You must make that choice at the time you create your queue manager. If you decide after you create your queue manager that you wish to switch from one to the other, you'll have to rebuild your queue manager to make that change. The options by default will create you circular logs. If you wish to explicitly control that, you can use the minus LC flag during the create of the queue manager, the CRTMQM command. If you want linear logging, it's minus LL. Moving on to foil 10, primary logs. Okay, we talked about the file names. The primary logs are what make up the range of logs that you will be using to contain your current transactional activity. What you're going to specify during creation is the initial minimum number of log files you would like to have available to contain that transactional activity. As you can see here, you can set that deliberately with the -LP command. By default, regards to platform, we'll create three. The minimum you can define is two. You see here for Unix and Windows, there are differences in maximums, 510 for Unix, 254 for Windows. This is one of those things that if you've created your queue manager and you find that your workload changes and you need to add a few more logs, you can make that change. All you have to do is alter it, and we'll show you where later in the presentation, and restart your queue manager. Moving on to slide 11, secondary logs. So you've decided how many logs you want to contain your transactional activity, but with every environment, there's always potential for your workload to suddenly increase, and you need to have a little bit of expansion capabilities. That's where the secondary logs come in. So you define your secondary logs should you run out of space in the primaries. You give yourself a little bit of headroom to deal with that increase in workload. You can specify that as well during the creation of the queue manager with the -ls command. Here again, you see the default 2, minimum 1, the maximum 509 for Unix, 253 for Windows. Again, once you've created your queue manager, if you find your needs change, you can go back and change this value and just restart your queue manager. Moving on to FOIL 12. Now, we talked about the fact that you could have 510 primaries, and you could have 509 secondaries. That's true, but understand that you have a maximum combined total for the two. So you couldn't have 510 primaries and 509 secondaries. You would have to have, if you set 510 primaries, you could only have one secondary. Okay? The same as Windows, you see 255 is your maximum. The minimum, based on the fact that the primary's minimum is 2, secondaries is 1, the minimum total file constraint you're going to have here is 3. This is, again, not how much work you're going to do in a day, but how much work or how much room you need for your current active transactions. Moving on to FOIL 13. So we talked about setting up the number of log files you want. The next attribute becomes log file size. This is defined in 4K pages. Log file size is one of those attributes that you cannot alter after you create your queue manager. So you have to make this determination, again, prior to creating your queue manager. If you find later that you have to change this, you're going to have to rebuild the queue manager. Err on the side of caution when you set this value. This parameter is controlled with a -LF flag. And if we go forward now to FOIL 14, you'll see the values that are acceptable here. You can see that we show the default values for Windows and for Unix. You see that we show the minimum values for Windows and Unix. These are number of pages. And we show the maximum, and the maximum is actually for both platforms, 65535. You'll see what each one of those files, remember we talked about three primaries by default. So each one of those files with the Windows default would be 1 meg inside. You'd have 3 meg of log space. Knowing the 511 constraint on Unix and the 255 constraint on Windows, you can see you would have 256 megabyte of maximum working log space on a Windows environment if you went with the default value there. You can see that the ranges that we support is, you know, on Windows all the way down to 32 megabytes total transactional activity contained in that much space, all the way up to 128 gigabytes. We'll talk more about the value you should set here, but like I said, if you're going to err on this, you want to err on the side of caution, make it a little larger, understanding the fact that this is not one of those features you can change after the fact. Okay? Let's move on to slide 15, log paths. Another attribute you can set during creation, another attribute you can change after the queue manager is created. A word of caution, though, this is one of those parameters that if you do want to contain your logs in a different location, you want to do that at the creation time. If you change this after the fact, as you'll hear later, it can cause some problems in your environment if you're not doing the right things, following up, making sure the files are relocated in the right place, permissions are set, and so on. We'll also talk about some reasons why you might want to do that. Again, LD controls that. It can be changed after the fact. Moving on to FOIL 16. log buffer size. Now, remember when we started this section, I talked about the fact that some attributes you can't set during the creation of your team manager. This is one of those attributes. It's one that you can change after the fact. And you can see it's, again, allocating 4K pages. The default is 128, which is 512K. The minimum is 18 or 72K, the maximum 4096 to 16 megabytes. We represent the default of 128 by 0. Okay? You'll see where you can change this later in the presentation. Moving on to slide 17, log write integrity. I want to spend a little time on this because there seems to be some confusion over what people, when people see this. They see triple write, they see single write. The assumption is, well, triple write means I'm writing it three times. Well, no, that's not really true. Triple write refers to the algorithm we use within MQ to ensure your data integrity. I will tell you this, the single write is a very, has very limited usefulness. It requires a very specific series of hardware. It is generally for very specific workload. In most cases, customers will not see a significant performance difference between the two. From an integrity standpoint, obviously triple write is going to be the better choice. We strongly recommend that you leave this triple write. All of our performance tests that we publish on MQ use the triple write setting. So the thing to take away from this is it's not three times. We're not writing your data three times. We're writing it just once. It's just the way we're ensuring it gets to the disk. And that we recommend that you leave it a triple write. If you're thinking about things right, you should have a conversation with IBM to ensure it's the right thing to do. And moving on to 4L18.
We are going to talk about the logging configuration. When we talk about the default logging configuration, MQS.ini file is the one that we need to look at. And by the way, this is slide 19. The MQS.ini file contains the logging parameters that Barry just talked about. Note the path to this file in the Unix, which is var mqm, mqs.ni file. If you're running on the Windows machine, this info is kept in the registry. Note that if you're running on the Windows machine, there are no mqs or qm.ini files, and if you ever need to edit this info, you can go into MQ GUI, and we will show you how to do that in the next couple of slides. And let's move on to slide 20, please. All right, so looking at the MQS.ini file, here's how our logging parameters look like. They are contained in a stanza called log defaults. Logging can be altered so that when the key manager is created, it will use the settings in this stanza in the MQS.ini file, and thus no additional flags will have to be specified via CRT MQM command. If logging parameters are not changed, then the key manager will be created with the default logging configuration as seen here. Now, reasons why you would want to edit this information in the MQS.ini file is if you, for example, wanted to use the specific type of logging. Also, you may want to edit this info if you wanted to use the specific number of the file pages. That way, when you create your key manager, you do not have to specify flags in CRT MQM so that these values can be taken from MQS.ini file in the log default stanza. And we will be talking in more detail about CRT MQM command in the next part. Let's move on to slide number 21. All right, so this is for the guys who are running the MQ on the Windows machine. So if you ever need to edit the default login configuration, when you go to the MQ Explorer, this is a path how to get to it. So you right-click on IBM WebSphere MQ and select, and then let's move on to slide number 22. All right, so once you do that, you will have a window here. And once you click on Default the Log Settings, you will see all the logging parameters that we just talked about represented. And notice that you can edit every one of them. And also, this is the part that would be consistent with the same kind of information that you would see in MQS.ini file on Unix. And let's move on further, slide number 23. When QManager is actually created, a file or a Windows registry entry will also be created that contains configuration information for your QManager. This will include the logging parameters that we just talked about. If you're running on Unix, this file will be called qm.ini, and each QManager will have its own qm.ini file, and if you're running on Windows, it will have its own registry entry, and the info there is not shared between QManagers. And please note a path to qm.ini file if you're running on the Unix machine, and the registry key if you're running on the Windows machine. As shown on the slide, this would be the default locations for creating the qm.ini file as well as the registry entry. And let's move on to slide number 24. Right? And this is what you would see if you look into a qm.ini file. The logging parameters are contained in a stanza called log. You can see the number of logs, number of the log buffer pages, log paths, and the log write integrity. Some of these you can change, and the new settings will take effect after the QManager restart. And some of this you can try to edit, but once you restart your QManager, the changes that you were trying to make will not take effect. Now, if you want to change number of logs and or the log buffer pages and restart your QManager, this type of change will take effect. Now, if you're trying to add, for example, a type of logging that you're using, this will not take effect because once you create your QManager with a certain type of logging, and this is how it will stay. So if you do want to change the type of logging, basically you will have to rebuild your QManager from scratch. Another key point to bring forth here when talking about editing a log path in the qm.ini file or the registry after the QManager has already been created, if you alter the log path and do not move the log files and the log file header to a new path and try to restart your QManager, it will fail because it is not going to find the logs. So if you have to do this, please make sure that you take note of that. And, of course, the best way to set the log path and to think about it is actually before you create your QManager. Moving on to slide 25. All right, so again, for the guys that are running on Windows or the Linux x86 machine, you can use the MQ Explorer GUI to view or edit the QManager's login configuration. So you would right-click on the QManager and select the properties. And what you would get is we're going to move on to slide 26. You will get a view of the login configuration. Click on the log option, and this is an example of same login parameters that we just talked about and what they would look like in the MQ Explorer. Note that whatever you cannot change is grayed out. So, and you may also notice that if you are doing it via the MQ Explorer, the log path is also grayed out as well. So if you ever need to change the log path on the Windows machine, you will have to do it through the registry. All right, and moving to the next section, which would be how our logs are created. And next slide, slide 28. All right. Okay, so logs would be created at the same time as the key manager. The command to create key manager is called CRTMQM. There is a set of flags that you can use to specify the login parameters for these key managers. And we will get into examples of CRTMQM and how to use the flags on the next slide, but this is the flags that we have showed you before. Slide 29, please. All right. Here are a few ways how you could use the CRTMQM command and ways to deal with your logs. In the first choice, we're not using any flags. So when we're doing CRTMQM, and then the key manager name, QM1, the key manager will be created default logging parameters as would be specified in MQS.ini file or the Windows registry. In the second example, when we are going to use more flags, actually, and let me go through them to show you what they do. The first flag is minus LD flag, which is used to point to a log path. On this slide, we're showing you an alternate path, so you would see how that would be done. Next flag is minus LF, which sets the number of log file pages, which is in cases 2048. LP is for primary logs, which is 10, and LF is for the secondary logs, which is 5. Note that in this example, we did not specify a flag to choose type of logging. So our choices would be minus LC for the circular, minus LL for a linear log. So since we're not trying to use this flag at all, the value would be taken from the MQS.ini file. And in this particular example, the key manager will be created with a circular logging. Now, moving on to the next example, and we're looking at CRTMQM minus LLQM1. In this case, the only flag that we're using is LL, which says to MQ to have this key manager with the linear logging. So, since other flags are not specified, the values would be taken as a default from MQS.ini file. And the last but not least example, we actually make use of all of the flags. So let's move on to slide number 30. All right. Okay, so again, if we're running on the Windows machine or the Linux x86, we can use MQ Explorer to create our key manager along with the login configuration. And what you see here is a path on how to create your key manager. Slide 31, please. This foil shows the next screen as you go through the QM creation process. And this is where you can name your key manager, but the rest of this we're not going to cover here. So we're going to go ahead and click Next. Slide 32. Okay, so this is where we want to be. This is a screen where we are going to create the login configuration. Note that you can that you can select the type of logging, and circular is already chosen for you because it is a default. Also, you can set the number of logs, the path to the logs via this GUI. So once the Schema Manager is created, if you're running on Windows, the Windows registry will be updated. And if you happen to run your GUI within Linux x86, then this info will go to into a QM.ini file. And next slide, please.
Okay, so we're going to talk about log usage. Let's move on to slide 34. So we talked about what it takes to create them. We talked about the various attributes associated with them, primary and secondary logs. What we're going to talk about is active and inactive logs, for restart, log files are no longer required. That's going to be a linear logging, as you'll see here in a few minutes. But we'll go through and show basically the operation of these two kind of side by side. Let's move on to slide 35. So you've created this, just to keep this somewhat simple, we've created a queue manager, one circular, one linear, using the default, three primaries, two secondaries. During the creation process and right after you first started up, you go out there and you could look in both directories and you would see the exact same files out there. You'd see S followed by 70.log through S602, 60s followed by 2.log. For both of them. This is, after your initial startup, this is your active set of log files, again, both for circular and linear. Let's go ahead and go forward to slide 36. As you start writing transactional activity, in circular logging, what we're going to do is we're going to start writing in log file 0, and then we're going to write to log file 1, and then we're going to write to log file 2, and providing everything is contained within those three log files, we're going to turn around and start writing a log file 0 again, and then 1, and then 2, over and over again, reusing the same files as we need to record your transactional activity. With linear logging, just as the name implies, we're going to write to 0, we're going to write to 1, then we're going to write to 2, 3, 4, and so on. You notice down at the bottom of this picture, 5 and 6, the way linear logging works is once we complete writing a log file, for example, when we had just 0, 1, and 2, when we finished writing in 0 and we were writing in 1, we asked the formatter to create us a new file to add to the chain, so log file 3 would be created, formatted, ready for the logger to continue to write. So these files are formatted ahead of the logger. In both cases, you still see your transactional activity is contained within three files. Just with linear, that's moving on down the chain. We always write in sequential order on linear logging. Okay? Let's move on to slide 37. So here's where it gets a little interesting. We talked about secondary logs. We talked about being able to handle an additional amount of workload. And we're going to cross over and we're going to talk about linear first. And linear logging is fairly simple. As we're writing along in log file 2, 3, and we write to 4, and we need to continue to write, but for some reason there's a transaction still sitting in 2 that hasn't been committed for whatever reason, you've told us through your configuration that, hey, you can have a couple secondaries. So we would then take and say, okay, that's fine. We'll write to 5, we'll write to 6, but before we write to 7, we had better be able to free up 2, but we've got that little bit of headroom. And so when it comes to secondaries, it's not really the same as it in linear logging is in circular logging. They are the ability to expand the length of the transaction or the active logs has necessary to contain the transactional activity. With circular logging, if we flip over to the left-hand side of the foil, you notice the files are coming in at odd places. Well, again, it all depends on when we need these as to when we would add the secondary. So when we had the previous example, we were writing to 1, we were writing to 2, we wrote to 2, okay, we said, okay, we need to go back and write to 0, and say, okay. What we're showing here is we were writing to 1, we said we need to write to 2, well, or we need to go into the next file. Well, 2 contains an active transaction in this loop. So to prevent or to keep performing the necessary activity we did, we do to write your transaction, we ask for a secondary to be created, and we place it in the chain. So So instead of going to 2, which contains tail end of transactions, we went to 3. And so we got 1 writes to 3, and then it writes to 2, and then comes back to 0. Again, at some point, we were in 0. We decided, you know what, we really need to go on and start writing in 1, but there's a transaction in 1 that still hasn't been committed. So again, because you've allowed in your configuration to have 2 secondaries, we insert 4 into the mix. And circular logging will write in this kind of an out-of-order state, not something you need to manage or worry about, but it is different than linear. We don't necessarily write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever. It depends on when the secondary was necessary as to when it would come to the mix. Now, we've got this expansion here on circular logging. When does MQ give it up? Let's say that this expansion happened during your end-of-month processing, and you know for the next 30 days, you're not really going to need that much space. Does the end-of-month processing, when that completes, do we immediately give these away? The answer is no. MQ will go through several iterations of this log chain to ensure that if I give away this log file, I'm not going to need it right away because there's a lot of overhead in creating the file. But let's not do that. We'll go through and say, okay, we're able to contain it now in 4 files instead of 5. Let's give away 4. So the giveaway 4, that file is deleted. We keep on going through the 4 files, and eventually we say, yep, we can contain ourselves back within 3. We've made enough iterations. Let's go ahead and drop log file 3, and all of a sudden we're back to 0, 1, and 2. Another thing to point out here is let's say that you set your primaries, as you said here, 3 and 2, and you see that you're hitting secondaries, you're having problems with transactions, not being able to be contained even within those 5. You decide, you know what, I need to change my primaries to 10 and 5 like we showed in the previous example. So you go out and you change your primaries to 10 and 5. Well, okay, maybe we just needed 5 or maybe we just needed 6. But once you've made that change, we don't automatically go out and create 10 primaries. We'll create those primaries as necessary, just like we would for secondary logs. The difference is you've told us you want 10 eventually, so if we have 7, we're never going to give away those 7 logs. Until we cross that threshold of 10 that you've stated, we'll just keep adding to the entire number of log files for circular logging. If the same is true for linear. If you change it to 10, we're not going to go out there and format 10 more files and just add them to the end, just so that we have that extra space. We'll use them as we need them. You've given us the go-ahead, basically, by your configuration change, to go ahead and do that activity. So that's, again, kind of a difference. Understanding that circular will add as necessary, will subtract as it's able. Linear will just keep on writing down the list. Okay? Now, one thing I want you to note here is 0 and 1 on this page. And we're showing here that we're no longer writing a 0 and 1. All of our active work now is in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So what goes on with 0 and 1? Well, let's go on to the next page. Because of the nature of linear logging is that we contain information associated with your objects, your queues and such, 0 and 1, in the case shown here, will probably contain information associated with your queues and your channels and so on that might be necessary for recovery. And what we do is periodically during startup and periodically throughout the run, we throw a couple messages into your MQ error logs, MQ 7467, AMQ 7468. Based on the example I showed you previously, we were writing in files 2 and above. So we know to restart, the oldest transaction exists in 2. However, because we haven't advanced our media image, which you'll learn about in a few minutes, we would need 0 should we ever need to recover an object. So although they're not being written to, you can't just discard them. Okay? One other thing I want to point out, we periodically put these messages in the error logs. If you go to a command prompt, run MQSC against the queue manager, and you do a display QM status all on linear logging only, this is not available for circular, the information that will be provided to you is basically these 2 values will be included in the output. You'll see media log, you'll see REC, the restart log. You also get one that tells you the current log, which tells you where we're currently writing. Okay? And let's go ahead and move on to slide 39. Just before we go, after you, we started, once you started your queue manager, there are some error, or messages that we will put in the error logs. They are just information messages associated with logging. During startup, we will put out an AMQ, a series of AMQ 5037s. Now, for circular and linear, you'll get the first one, which is logger IO started. It's a task within the queue manager. For linear logging, we throw out a couple more to talk about the log formatter, and we talk about the logger event process. Now, I'm not going to go into logger event process, but I do want to talk a moment about the log formatter. Because of the nature of linear logging, that we only write to a log file once, to have the logger stop to do a format would really impact your performance. So we actually have a separate task out there that his job or its job is strictly to format log files so the logger doesn't have to stop. He just keeps on trucking along. In circular logging, because the only time they would be needed is when we deal with secondaries, they are formatted in line. The logger actually stops long enough to format a file to do what it needs to do and then goes on about its business. So that's a definite distinction between the two. Okay? Let's move on to FOIL 40.
All right. So let's talk about the log management. And let's move on to slide 41, please. All right. So here we're going to talk about the linear logging specifically, since there is no log management that's needed for circular type of logging. So why do we need to manage logs? As we have talked before, when using linear logging, we write to a log file only once. So once it's full, we're going to go on and write to a new log. If left unchecked, you will have the newly created log files fill up your file system. So in order to prevent this from happening, we need to manage our linear logs. So as part of the linear log management, here are a few steps that should be done to be able to move no longer used and no longer needed logs from a file system. The first step that needs to be done is running the record media image command, which is called rcdmqimg, that would record the current state of QM objects and all the data on the queues. This will advance the log numbers needed for restart and the recovery of your queue manager. And also note that this will not necessarily be the same log number. After RCD MQIMG is done, what you're going to see in your queue manager error logs are the messages like AMQ 7467 and AMQ 7468 that will show the log numbers needed for restart and the recovery. So as this command causes high volume of activity in QM logs, it is strongly recommended that this command is run either during off hours or during the lowest work volume of the day, as well as the lowest number of the messages in queues. Now, reason for that is because when RCD MQIMG command runs, it records data about all queue manager objects, and that would include data on queues. So if there is a queue with a large number of the messages on the queue, the RCD MQIMG will make use of a lot of resources in the file system space because it will have to log every single message on that queue. Also, it will cause RCD IMG command longer to run. So when RCD MQIMG is done running, you may remove logs with numbers lower than the ones that are needed for recovery, that's freeing up space for new log files. For example, if we go back to the log usage that we just saw, if, for example, you have logs 0 through 5, and you run your RCD MQ IMG command, and say that you see in the logs that the log needed for recovery is log 4. What needs to happen is that you can remove logs 0 through 3, and QManager will be left with logs starting at 4 onwards, and it will go on do its own work. Now, what do we do with the files that we have just removed? The removed files can either be deleted, or you can save them at the location of your choosing outside of the MQ path. And we're going to go to the next slide, slide 42. As we have just said, there is no log management needed if you're using circular logging. Now, however, there are tools that are available to aid you linear log management. So there are some CAT2 and CAT4 support packs, and MS6.2 is used in most cases. Now, link to the support pack page will be located in the links section of this page. And let's move on to the next slide, slide 43. And Barry has already talked about the various messages that you would see in QM error logs. And I would like to add one more to the mix and kind of talk a little bit about it. This is a message, AMQ7469. And it can be seen in the logs as you know, the work runs with no issues. The AMQ7469 may point to the fact that there is either a long-running transaction out there that has not been done yet, or that there is a runaway transaction. When this takes place, what MQ is going to do is going to roll back this unit of work and go on. Now, the key point that I'd like to bring up here is that when you see this, do not increase the number of logs. What needs to happen is that you need to look at the apps and see if you have any new apps out there, or there have been changes, so that you you know, may see either a long-running transaction and you do not commit often enough, or indeed you have a runaway transaction. The way to take care of this problem would be pretty much to look at the apps and to see what's there. Now, there are cases where you do have a large unit of work and you need more log space to be able to fit it in. So in this case, it would be a right thing to do to increase the number of logs. So we're going to move on. Next slide, please. Slide 44. And let's talk a little bit about recovery. Slide 45, please. So to stay within the scope of this presentation, we're going to talk about recovery scenarios that have to do with either accessing or trying to recover data from MQ logs. So the first case I would like to talk about is if you have a loss of power, or if there was a reboot or a QManager failure. All you have to do in this case is restart your QManager. Once you do that, the queues will be restored to their committed state at the time of the failure. If data in queue is out of sync with data in the logs, this will be reconciled during the QManager start. Data from the logs will be replayed, and if data on the queues is incomplete, this will make sure that it is corrected and you will have the same data in the logs as you do in the queues, and that's where you want to be. So the the persistent data will not be lost. Now, the non-persistent data, since it is not being written to disk and is kept in the memory, will be discarded and is therefore unrecoverable. And I do want to point out that this is true regardless of type of logging that you would be using. Let's move on to the next slide, 46. All right. Now, what do we do if we have a disk failure? A key point that I would like to bring up is when this takes place, regardless of type of logging, before you attempt to implement any kind of recovery steps, please save what you do have for NQ logs as well as the key manager data after the failure and call IBM to see what options are available to you for the recovery. After you have done that, here are some steps that you can take as part of a recovery process depending on your type of logging. Now, if you're using circular logging, here are your options. If you have a good backup, what you can do is that you can restore your key manager and the logs and start your key manager. Now, if you do not have a backup, you will have to rebuild your key managers and the logs brand new. When we talk about the backups, another key point to bring up here is that the best chance of having a good backup is to do it for MQ logs in the key manager data on a regular basis. Now, thing to note here is that when you do that, the MQ has to be down. So if you do need to do that, this will probably take some time and will have to be scheduled. Now, what if we're running linear logging? With the linear logging, if your logs are still good, try to start your key manager and recover your queues from logs, and you can use RCR and QOBJ commands. Now, if the logs are no good, what you can do is use the backup, and you will have to recover your key manager along with the logs from the backup and then start your key manager. Now, again, if backup is not available or no good, you will have to rebuild your key manager along with the logs from scratch. Now, while you're going through this, if you're having any issues at all, you can call IBM support team and we'll be more than happy to help you out. And the last key point on the slide is that in order for you to decrease the chance of losing the logs along with the key manager, we do say that you need to have your logs and the QM data separate disks, since there's a lesser chance that both would go down at once and you lose it all. All right, so and let's move on to slide 47. All right. Now, on the last grim note, if you have your logs and you have your key manager and you just end up with the damaged object, if you're running circular logging, there's not much for object recovery. So, essentially, you're going to have to recreate that queue. Now, with linear logging, you can recover the queue by running the RCR and QOBJ, and that should take care of that problem. Next slide, please.
Okay, so let's talk about, go into the summary and the questions. Some points we want to bring up. Let's go to slide 49. Okay, we talked about transaction logs. We talked about the parameters and the configuration of the logs. We talked about the steps that you need to go through to create the log files. It's part and parcel with creating the queue manager, how they are used and how they function, some of the management of the physical files, and then we touched on recovery. One last thing I do want to go into, if we go to slide 50, let's talk about some considerations you might have when it comes to tuning. We talked about parameters you can change, and let's talk a little bit about why you might want to do one or the other. Obviously, LogType, it depends on do you need to do media recovery? If the answer is no, then Circuit might be the answer for you. There is a little bit of a performance hit that we've talked about with linear logging. The fact that we only write these files once means that there is a task out there that's going to be creating files ahead of time. It's not a twice as slow or anything like that, but there is some performance degradation to using linear logging. The logging type is a key consideration. The log page size. We showed you the range on that. We showed you the fact that you can't change that once you create your queue manager. Well, some might suggest, well, why don't I just set it to the maximum, and that's fine, and we'll go with the maximum number. The problem with that is a maximum size log file is 256 megabytes in size. If your activity through the entire day results in only 100 meg of data being written to the logs, then it could take you 10 days or more to find a transaction that isn't behaving as expected, that has started and not committed, or is hung for whatever reason, or is in some kind of a spin. So log page size, you know, again, being generous, but also understanding the ramifications of saying it's too high, you end up with a situation where you could mask a long-running or misbehaving transaction. Log buffer size. Now, we talked about the default. Why might you want to increase that? The way this works is messages are queued up, or activity is queued up for the logger to record into the logs. If you're dealing with very large messages, you might want to increase your buffer from 512. If you've got one meg message, that means it's going to take us two loads of the buffer to get that message in there. So you might want to increase that value. If you set it to the max, it doesn't hurt. It's 16 megabytes max. So if you've got the room, go ahead and do that. 64 megabytes. Primary and secondary log file numbers. The only tuning consideration there is, you know, when we talk about there's no management for circular logging, the only one caveat to that is if you're going to change those values, make sure there's enough space on the disk. As such, you know, if you increase it to a value that doesn't support it, MQ will fail because, again, we will create this file or attempt to create the file when we need it, and if we can't create that file, we'll fail. The good news of that is we create these files before we write to them, so running out of disk space won't result in transactional instability. We will maintain your transaction integrity if you don't have enough space for the logs. Yana touched on briefly having two separate disks for, you know, recovery purposes. There's also going to be a slight performance hit, a benefit to that, because again, the queues are one item, the logs are another. If you're writing to those two separate devices, there's going to be a little bit of an increase in throughput. So again, another consideration. Okay, let's go on to slide 51. We talked about the links for the support packs. The support site is listed here. It's the, you know, where you can get to, you know, tech notes and such. The support packs are linked off of that, but I did give you a direct link here. The manuals are listed here, too. The reason I state that is we talk generally, everything that we've discussed here, a lot of this is covered in our admin guide for MQ. One last point. The values you see here are version 6. There are some slight changes in version 7. You might want to review that for your environment if you're looking at version 7. And slide 52, gives you some additional WebSphere product resources.
Hello. I was wondering if you had any suggestions on how I can track down the source of, in terms of the application. I'm seeing AMQ7469 messages erratically but chronically in Production Queue Manager log, and my attempt to track down what's going on hasn't been too successful.
We do have a procedure for doing that track down, and probably the best thing to do is for you to contact us by email or PMR, and we'll get you that information. But there is a way to do that. Okay, Bill?
Great.
Okay. I've got your name here. If I don't see an email or a PMR from you, we'll track you down and get you that.
I would appreciate that.
Yep, we got it.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
there a tech note about finding out the long-running transactions?
Morris, I think it's an internal document that we have off of our Level 3 site that we share with customers. No, there isn't a public tech note on it that I'm aware of.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a tech note?
Yes, it'd also be nice to have a message to tell us. We can look at those options.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, conclude the presentation.